here. And why don't you introduce yourself a little bit, Aaron, to the listeners and tell us a little bit about this new exciting music that's coming out.
Oh, hi, Beth. I'm Aaron Okasik, and I am a musician in Brooklyn, New York, who has just put out his first album.
I'm really excited. You've released two songs already, and I got to tell you, I love both of them, especially Spending My Love. I mean, that's just really, really catchy. I mean, it just really brought me into it. And, you know, you got a little bit of a music legacy here that is kind of amazing. But it also really sounds, you know, it's got some, you know, harken backs to, you know, like your father's music. But then I think it really stands on its own. It's just really layered and really catchy and brings you in. And then there's like this groove to it that's really amazing.
Oh,
and I'm really,
really
anxious to hear the rest of the album. I saw you teased on Instagram this morning a little bit of the next one that's coming out.
Yeah, the next one is coming out on Friday. And it's a straight up like acoustic ballad, but you're right, the other songs, you know, the more rockin' songs, are they do stand on their own, I hope, but they also kind of are reminiscent of just like everything that I have ever listened to in my life, which is mostly you know, I'm 48, so it's mostly Cars music and 80s music, and
see, that's what I'm really into,
simple. Yeah, just the kind of like simple rock songs. And, you know, I thought if I was going to start this, I should start there.
Right. Well, you know, I got to tell you, I laid it out a little bit in an email, you know, that I have links to your family going way back to actually February of 1985.
That is so funny.
Yeah. And had I not gone out that night, right after I turned 20, with my best friend who was trying to track down Chris. She was obsessed with Chris for some reason. Okay.
Oh,
I knew nothing about them being in Columbus or anything at that time. And she drags me down to Ohio State. And we went into Mean Mr. Mustard's for the first time, which was a bar that really played a lot of the really great 80s stuff. And I walked in there the first time and I was greeted by what has become my most favorite song in the world, which is the Smiths' How Soon Is Now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pulsating through the air. And, you know, back then, you know, people could smoke in the bars and everything, and it had kind of this smoky feeling and everything. And she went and she found Chris, who kind of really didn't pay that much attention to her or anything. But you know, he was trying to play real cool. And I'm going to describe
That's
a little
funny.
Bit this night. And then he and his friend Jimmy, who I always call Jim, was sitting at the bar there. And they kind of ignored her and everything and, you know, said hello, you know. But anyway, we sat there and we were listening to all this music. And it, that night really introduced me to some of my most favorite music in the world. You know, the Smiths, How Soon Is Now, In Excess's Original Sin, Yaz, Nobody's Diary, and other stuff that I had been listening to, you know, on MTV and everything. And it just really, really was very intoxicating. And then they had left to go to another bar, which was even more really cool music, 80s stuff, you know, kind of the new wave, kind of the punk era type stuff called Crazy Mamas. And you climb up this dark stairway upstairs and this big guy greets you, checks your IDs. Back then, we could drink when we were 19, could drink beer in Ohio at 19. And he wasn't paying any attention to her. She went off with some guys from CCAD and left me sitting there. And that's when Jim started talking to me. And Jim and I were talking for a while, and we ended up going down and sitting in his car in a parking lot. And I'm sitting in his car talking to Jimmy. All of a sudden, the door opens, and there is Chris. He slides into the front seat and sits on my lap and introduces himself as Chris Okasik. And I'm like, okay, it was the strangest introduction I've ever had. You know, I said, yeah, I'm Beth Ackerman and everything. And it became apparent that I lost my ride home. So we ended up taking his roommate from CCAD, Ramo, back to Ramo's sister's place on the east side. And in the back seat of the car, while this punk rock song is going, is Chris and Ramo singing at the top of their lungs, jumping up and down in the back seat of the car. And then we dropped Ramo off and dropped Chris off at CCAD. And then Jim and I dated for a while. And then 12 years later, because we were kind of on again, off again, I have a son with Jim. So that's the strangest night I ever had in my life. But it really impacted my love of certain songs. And those songs that from Mustards and Crazy Mamas, you know, they played a lot of Depeche Mode and New Order and Ramones and everything, just really got in my head. So that's kind of my favorite music, even though I'm associated now with a country artist. My music is still that 80s stuff. So that's my story. So but anyway, tell us more about the album. Are you still there?
Why did that do that?
Oh, yeah, that happens every so often.
Okay,
you'll lose the connection. So it's no big deal to pick up again. It's just
well, I was just saying that it was great that you. Well, I was saying that it was great that is the greatest type of music, and it does stick with you, like
it really
from the
does.
80s. That's the music that sticks with you, and that like it's such good music from then, and so you know that's I don't know what I was saying about that, but then how far did you get? Because then you were like,
I just finished the story
the
that we went back to CCAD, and then Jim and I,
eventually
12 years later had our son, and had that night not occurred, I would not have my son. And even though Jim and I, you know, he really didn't have any part in raising my son.
Right.
I'm very thankful I have my son. And your family helped my son to be able to connect with his aunt and uncle and everything. So,
oh, cool.
Yeah.
Well, that's
so
great.
That's my background. And I will tell you, too, years later, when Jackie Mahan had her gallery and she had your father's single art show, you know, art show.
Yeah.
I went down there and I hadn't drawn in a long time. And a lot of my drawing style over the years was very similar to some of the stuff your dad did.
Oh, cool.
And it encouraged me to start drawing again. And even though right now I really can't do it because I'm still recovering from this broken arm. I broke my left arm, shattered both bones in my forearm, have two metal plates in, and this was in September, and I still have nerve damage, so I'm not quite up to par yet with all my fine motor skills.
Well, you're gonna have to draw with your toes.
And I'm so left-handed, it's not even funny. You should have seen me trying to feed myself. I could not feed myself at first. And it's been an experience, but it's coming back. But there's just certain things I'm just never going to be able to do again. And it kind of isn't a lot of fun, but I do have, it does function again. And I can draw, but I get worn out real quickly.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm mainly doing photography and the songwriting and the podcast.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah.
and I'm waiting here for the big announcement about, you know, my personal life, but that's going to take a little longer. That's I feel like I'm living in the witness protection program with this whole thing.
Okay.
But it's going to be amazing when it does come out and stuff.
Well,
but
conflicts can sometimes bring the best things out. So all these challenges just make everything else harder, and then I don't know, maybe that's,
and then it's going to be
good for something.
At the end of the day, it's going to be an amazing story, and it's been probably the toughest couple years of my life, but it's also been really good in terms of the creativity and finding songwriting. You know, I write lyrics and I can hack out melodies and stuff on the piano. I'm not a great musician, but I can do it. And I really do enjoy like working with musicians and other songwriters, and it's been a lot of fun to be able to do that. So
that must be fun.
So tell us a little bit, you know, where tell us a little bit, you know, when, why did you decide at the, at this stage of life to start putting out music?
Well, I mean, I guess it's a pandemic story. I don't know. It's just one of being kind of like locked up in my house for many months in 2019. And it was just, I guess it was just like after my dad had passed away, and after, you know, I had got divorced as well, or I don't know if you had, but I got divorced, and then I just kind of found myself in this like void. So I kind of had my guitar and I was just messing around with it for many months, and then, you know, it clicked on me. What am I doing? Why don't I just start writing some lyrics with this, and why don't I just keep going and going and going? And it turned into this like 2 year obsession where I just kind of like was up all night, 2 in the morning after work. You know, I still kept my full-time job, and I learned all the software and learned drums and keyboards and everything, and did it kind of all myself and made this demo. And when I started shopping it around, people were kind of into it.
It is really good. You know, the two songs I've
So,
heard, they're really, really good.
yeah, and there's a whole wide variety of well, there's, you know, some more upbeat songs, all kinds of songs on the album, and it just, I just needed to do it. It just, I had to finish it. I had to do it, and I wanted to do it like as best as I could, as professionally as I could, you know. So then it just became this really amazing, fun experience where I didn't know that I knew how to write lyrics, or maybe I don't, but I did anyway. I
And
definitely
I
know.
think what I've heard are pretty darn good, you know. And I've been told by two top country music stars that I'm a very good lyric writer.
Oh, that, it's amazing to be able to do that. I mean, that's so cool for you. And like, I don't know, it's all just like, I guess it's just, you know, as long as you're just writing about whatever's real and stuff, maybe it just works. And I didn't know how to sing, and you know, I had to, I've never sang before, and I was basically just making it up, like faking it for these demos, like splicing together moments that worked, and spending all night and all weekends, you know, practicing singing and doing all these things. And then when it came time to do it, I was like, well, this is, you know, this is the chance. So I went and I got a vocal coach. I'm like 48 years old guy Googling a vocal coach, and this guy is like 20, you know. It's like I walk in, he's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm like, well, I have songs that I wrote that I, and he's like, oh, he's like, most people come in here and they just want to like learn how to sing Creep, you know, by Radiohead or something. And I'm like, no, I got my own. And so he was like, oh, this is nice. So I've never done this before. So he was like helping me. And actually he was cool. He like helped me, you know, we changed the pitch on some of the songs, and he taught me like where my range was and things that I never thought of. You know, I just sing everything really low and, you know, everything. And yeah, and so, you know, it was just like an all-out effort. And my producer, Abe Seyfarth, was like, played an amazing role in helping me while I still maintained a full-time job throughout this whole thing. So it
That's
really was
great.
cool.
That's great. And finding a good producer is really, really a good thing. You know, when you have one who's really supportive of you and works with you, I mean, great things come of it.
Oh yeah, he was amazing. He had to, like, I was, you know, I only had a week to do my vocal parts, and
Are you still there? Uh-oh. Ah, you're back.
hey, all
It could
right.
be on my end too. I mean, this 5G here in this area, because we're so close to the Nashville airport,
Yeah.
goes a little crazy.
I wonder, I don't know what makes it cut out. Maybe does my phone go to sleep or something? I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, sometimes I tap my phone in between.
Oh, maybe I should do that sometimes.
Yeah, I'm always trying to keep that. So
right, I'll do that a little bit.
Yeah. So you only had a week to lay down the vocals.
Yeah, and then I only had a week to lay down the vocals, and so what Abe did, that my producer, was kind of like replay and lay out all of the parts from my demo in a more professional kind of sounding, you know, clearer. You know, I would sit,
right.
My demo was me like in an open room just playing with, you know, with bad connections and bad audio devices. And he would kind of like try to mimic and redo a lot of the parts so that when I came in for my 1 week, there was only like a few things that I had to do that were like more, you know, that I had a person, like there's a little personality in my guitar playing. So I had to kind of like do those parts over again. But the parts that were like rhythm or something like that, he basically, you know, just retracked for me while I was working.
Oh, that's great.
And then I just like showed up and did the week. And so it was really great, except for I still had a problem. I had, you know, still a fear of singing
right
in front of him. So I still didn't nail that particularly.
Uh-huh.
So every night, so instead we decided that I would just redo all the instruments, all the guitars and stuff when we were working together.
Uh-huh.
And then every night at home during that week, I went in my closet with the microphone.
Uh-huh.
And spent maybe, you know, till 2 or 3 in the morning singing 50 some takes of all the songs.
Yeah. And it's a little different too when you're singing your own, when you're singing your own music and you're not, because I tend to mimic. I'm not the world's greatest singer. And I tend to mimic. And my voice is not great, but some people like my singing. My ex-boyfriend of nearly 10 years before I met my husband would ban me from singing loudly in the car. And I love to sing loudly in the car. Okay. I love to just belt out songs. My best friend is texting me right now. He's just going to have to wait. I love doing that, but he would ban me from singing in the car because he just, for whatever reason, didn't like it. He didn't like the 80s music I listened to. He was 8 years older than I was. And so he was kind of baby boomer, you know. What he thought was 80s music was the stuff I would turn off, you know, the pop stuff that I couldn't stand, you know.
Right.
He would say, oh, I'm playing 80s music for you. I was like, no, you're not. He'd turn off New Order. He'd turn off, you know, Depeche Mode, everything I liked, you know. And and so I didn't really sing until I met my husband. And I just, one day we were joking around, we had this conversation. I said, well, what song of yours, and I'm not going to name it because I don't want to name who he is. I said, what song of yours would he sing, you sing to me? And he named it. And I said, yeah, I know that song. That's a good song. Because I didn't know anything about him when I met him. I knew nothing about his music when I met him. And but then I had actually listened to that one song that he said, and my song that I chose was Jim Croce's Time in a Bottle, and I could do that halfway decently. And he said, and he actually told me, he says, my producer could actually get something out of you if you work with him. I'm like, you got to be kidding me, you know. And
I bet he could.
Yeah. And so I'm running this downstairs right now until we get our house and get some stuff straightened out and no longer in limbo. And upstairs, I actually interviewed him, David Corgan. He's running upstairs, and he's a singer, songwriter, and guitarist. And he lived in Turkey for a number of years, so he plays a lot of Turkish music too. But he likes all the 80s stuff. He's 45. And he and I were sitting up there, and we were going through all the old 80s stuff and figuring out what we could sing and what we couldn't sing, and early 90s stuff. And we came up with, we could do U2's One real well, and we could do Soul Asylum's Runaway Train real well. And we were doing some Cure songs, and we were really having a lot of fun with the Cure songs and the Violent Femmes songs.
Oh, nice.
And so I guess I could do that pretty well, because the lady I rent from, unless she was really snatched or something, said, hey, you guys are really good. And I'm like, wait a minute. But there is a very bad version of me singing Runaway Train with David on that interview with David.
Oh, that's funny.
And it's like, well, I don't think I'm that great of a singer, and I'm not that great of a musician, but I know I can write lyrics. Not so good.
Yeah, well, everybody has their own, like, you know, vocal style, right? So, like, that was the thing. I mean, I was, I think my producer was trying to tell me that I was maybe trying too hard in the studio, and then he wasn't getting the vibe. And, like, well, if I had more time, it would have been fine. It actually probably would have been great if I could have done the vocal takes with him, because his input would have been amazing. But because of the week limit, I had to just, you know, do it on my own in a home setting where I just could relax and feel more comfortable and, like, do a million takes and not have to feel pressure.
I think a lot of artists
do that. So that's just how I did it.
Yeah, I think a lot of artists do that. They're not recording necessarily in the top studios. They're, you know, that I know that my husband has his own home recording stuff that he uses a lot. Mm-hmm. And then he'll go back into the big studio and remix some of the stuff. And I think, you know, finding a way to relax, because I know that I actually sing better when I'm walking down the street, walking the dachshund, and I'm singing singing down the street than I do when, you know, they say, hey, sing this song. And it's like, you know?
Yeah, I guess so. It's like that.
Yeah. So where do you I mean, I really think this is going to be amazing. I think that once it gets out and start getting some more publicity, you've already gotten a couple of really good interviews I've seen. I think once it gets out, I think it's going to be very well received. I've already sent it to my husband and my best friend, who are both in the business.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. And I actually told my husband, I said, you need to get this thing played.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And I'm hoping maybe he will. And at some point, you know, there'll be more revealed, but as to why is kind of special. But I sent it to David too, and David really liked it, because David's a big fan of the Cars, you know, and that one song really has that heavy Cars vibe to it.
Yeah.
Which is great. You know, homage to your dad, you know. I mean, they were very influential. I mean, as artists.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can't avoid that.
You can't avoid that legacy. I mean, you know,
influence. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really think it's going to go someplace, and I really am really happy to get a chance to talk to you and interview you. And, you know, of course, with all the connections too, that's really amazing, you know?
Well, it's funny, you know, I really did, I never really thought that this would be something that I would ever do. So, you know, I'm just basically coming at this as a newcomer, really, not with many connections. I mean, yes, my name, obviously, but, like, it's really just, it's just coming at it, like, you know, like, as raw as it can be, I guess.
Right. But it's great. I mean, some of the best stuff is like the raw versions, you know. You know, like REM. Remember, you know, the first three albums of REM, I think.
Oh, yeah, I love it.
Those are great. I mean, I loved them, and I actually had a chance to see them in 85. It was the same, you know, but they were at Wittenberg University, which is I'm a Wittenberg grad. And cool. I actually had tickets that I had bought tickets for, you know, Chris and Jim to come over, and they never came over. And it's the only time I've ever scalped tickets in my life was I had these two extra tickets, because I couldn't get a hold of them to come over and see REM on the Fables of the Reconstruction tour in a very small venue at Wittenberg in the Field House. You know, it's about 2,500 people. During the opening act, Mike Mills and Peter Buck were standing right behind us. And they were all really accessible, and they were down at the Sig House signing autographs and everything. I didn't go down. I ended up going back to back to my dorm. But my best friend, the one who wanted to meet Chris, was there, and she went down, and she had to go get Michael Stipe and everybody's autographs and everything. And I really do credit her for getting me into music. As crazy as she was about chasing musicians and everything. And she did. She chased a lot. And I got drug along on quite a few things. And I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, but there are a lot that I didn't go. She really did introduce me to a lot of really good music, and through like Chris and Jim too, was introduced to a lot of new music and everything, because you know that was the time period that he tried to make a go with a music career. I remember when
Definitely.
He and I met Alex too. He and Alex with Glamour Camp were going into the studio. And they spent a lot of time in the studio, because I would call Jim and he said, well, we can't, you know, I can't come over to Wittenberg or anything. And, you know, because I'm going to go to the studio with Chris and Alex. And I remember when that came out, and I remember, you know, when he had that the video on MTV, you know, it was still
those are great songs.
Music videos. And I was like, oh, my God, you know, I've met these people. That was the first people that I had, you know, I've really met these people. And, you know, and then he was on SNL and everything. And that was really funny. But yeah, I mean, you know, I think sometimes the raw stuff is really, I mean, that's really where it's at. When it starts to get overproduced and over, you know. I think when they really get your hooks into you, like a record label does, and I'm not a big fan of record labels, to tell you the truth. When they get their hooks into you and they start, you know, shaping your image to what they want, that's when it gets too much. I mean, I would rather see somebody who really who has the raw talent, who puts forth and does something really creative, something really different, something that you're going to remember.
Yeah, well, I can say everything on this album is either amazing because of me or horrible because of me. It's all me.
Well, I'm excited. You know what I'll do is as soon as the whole album comes out, I'm going to do a review for you.
Oh, yeah, right. I can't wait for that. That'll be in September, but yes.
Yeah. I'll be really excited to do a review for you. I did that with Raleigh Keegan. He's he's an up-and-coming country artist here. He's an Ohio boy,
nice.
Too. You know,
a lot of great Ohio musicians.
Great Ohio musicians. And I had an opportunity to interview him right before his album came out. And then I went back and I did a review of his album. And I think he's really going to go places. He was playing at CMA Fest, and I wasn't able to go down and do anything this weekend with CMA Fest. And but I did go to that concert a couple weeks ago, and somehow miraculously ended up front and center. And that was fantastic.
That's great.
That was like, wow. You know, I mean, country is new to me. I mean, I'd listen to it as a kid because I'd go up to Northwest Ohio and stay with my grandma. And that was the only thing on was like Dolly Parton and Hee Haw and Porter Wagoner, you know, on TV up there. But I never listened to it again until about 4.5 years ago when I met the guy who became my husband. And there's some I really like and some I don't. But, you know, I still have a tendency, given the choice, it's going to be the Smiths. It's going to be playing on the radio.
Yeah.
Or Morrissey. David and I were doing a bunch of Morrissey songs. I don't know if you know the album You Are the Quarry.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that album. And we were doing all these songs off of there. And and my kids, because I have a daughter. I have an older daughter, too. She's 33 and Eric is 25. And my kids used to in the car go, Mom, why do you listen to such depressing music? And I'm like, it's not depressing. This is the coolest music ever, kids, you know.
It's true. They'll come around, or maybe they already have.
They did listen to some of it. I mean, there was some stuff that they really did like, but other stuff. My son, he likes to listen to like the female artists, like Hayley Kiyoko and Halsey, and he loves Demi Lovato. And he's an interesting character. He's very artistic. Graduated from CCAD and is now pursuing his master's at the Chicago Art Institute. So I'm very proud. Anyway, I was just saying I'm very proud of my son.
Yes, you're very proud. Oh, well, that's my daughter's going to SAIC in fall.
Oh, she is?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. So. Okay. And is it going to be undergrad or grad?
Undergrad.
Undergrad. She needs to look for Eric Ackerman.
Okay.
That's my son. And that would shock Eric. It's like, yeah.
That's so funny.
I love that. A family friend years and years ago, my stepfather from Upper Arlington, was the admissions director there. And Angela really was really influential in a lot of my art development, you know, because I have an art degree. She died before, you know, Eric would have gone there. But Eric got in there all on his own. And I like to think that, you know, Angela's looking down saying, all right, you know.
Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
He must be talented. It's a tough school.
He is. You know, he went to Wittenberg for 1 year. He was doing ceramics and he just didn't like the liberal arts thing. And so he transferred on his own to CCAD, and his aunt had graduated from CCAD. And of course, Chris, you know, went to CCAD too. He thrived at CCAD. And then he took a year off and then was looking at grad schools and ended up at SAIC. And he just loves it. And I think you have a background in filmmaking.
I do.
Yeah. Eric wanted to be a filmmaker there for a while. I actually bought him a video camera years ago. Cool. And he was constantly going around taking videos and editing them. And he was very interested in that. But he's really a contemporary artist. It's a lot of sculptural type stuff, using resins and stone. And he was very interested in like lights and neon. And so it's totally different than the stuff that I do. I'm more of a traditional artist. So sometimes he gets really mad at me because I don't understand his art.
That's funny.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't wait to see what they do at SAIC.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's fantastic. I'm sure she will do well. And Chicago is such a cool city. I can't wait to get back up there. I really enjoy visiting that. So I've actually only been to New York City once, and that was just for a whirlwind tour of a couple hours before we went down to we were staying with friends in New Jersey. And then we went to Manhattan for 1 day, went to the Guggenheim and the Jewish Museum. My ex-boyfriend of nearly 10 years was a Jewish guy from Lynn, Massachusetts, originally, Ivy League educated and a Columbus Public School math teacher. And the art and the math stuff at the end of the day, after 10 years, just didn't gel anymore. So now I'm with somebody, and unfortunately, you know, we've got a lot of separation right now just because of what he's doing and everything, but I'm with somebody who understands the creative genius, you know, the creative drive and, you know,
nice.
The need to create. So, and I'm sure, you know, I'm sure at some point, you know, maybe you'll find somebody again, really special. Yeah. You know,
definitely.
There's a lot of really, I've met a lot of really great people that, you know, would be great. I'm sure. Mm-hmm. So I really, really honestly enjoyed talking with you.
Oh, thank you. It's been really fun.
Yeah. And I'm going to put all this together. We got a couple segments here and cool. I'll let you know when it comes out. One other thing you might want to consider, as you start getting into the music a little bit more, is how you get verified on Instagram.
Okay.
And my friend Tyler Boone, there is an interview there with Tyler Boone of the Artist Formula, is somebody who might be able to assist you.
Okay.
Yeah, you just have to have so many pieces of publicity in order for them to do it. So he's a good person to talk to, and he's very, very knowledgeable about a lot of the stuff in the music industry right now, the current stuff. Yeah. And I highly recommend him. I accidentally uploaded the interview twice, so it's only an hour long instead of 2 hours.
I see. That's funny.
Technical difficulties when I was learning this program. But I really recommend that. And I wish you all the best of luck, and definitely stay in touch.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much, Aaron.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Here, and why don't you introduce yourself a little bit, Aaron, to the listeners, and tell us a little bit about this new exciting music that's coming out.
Oh, hi, Beth. I'm Aaron Okasik, and I am a musician in Brooklyn, New York, who has just put out his first album.
I'm really excited. You've released two songs already, and I got to tell you, I love both of them, especially Spending My Love. I mean, that's just really, really catchy. I mean, it just really brought me into it. And, you know, you got a little bit of a music legacy here that is kind of amazing. But it also really sounds, you know, it's got some, you know, harken backs to, you know, like your father's music. But then I think it really stands on its own. It's just really layered and really catchy and brings you in. And then there's like this groove to it that's really amazing.
Oh,
and I'm really,
you.
Really anxious to hear the rest of the album. I saw you teased on Instagram this morning a little bit of the next one that's coming out.
Yeah, the next one is coming out on Friday. And it's a straight up like acoustic ballad, but you're right, the other songs, you know, the more rockin' songs are, they do stand on their own, I hope, but they also kind of are reminiscent of just like everything that I have ever listened to in my life, which is mostly you know, I'm 48, so it's mostly Cars music and 80s music, and
see, that's what I'm really into,
simple. Yeah, just the kind of like simple rock songs. And, you know, I thought if I was going to start this, I should start there.
Right. Well, you know, I got to tell you, I laid it out a little bit in an email, you know, that I have links to your family going way back to actually February of 1985.
That is so funny.
Yeah. And had I not gone out that night, right after I turned 20, with my best friend who was trying to track down Chris. She was obsessed with Chris for some reason. Okay. Oh, I knew nothing about them being in Columbus or anything at that time. And she drags me down to Ohio State. And we went into Mean Mr. Mustard's for the first time, which was a bar that really played a lot of the really great 80s stuff. And I walked in there the first time and I was greeted by what has become my most favorite song in the world, which is the Smiths' How Soon Is Now.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pulsating through the air. And, you know, back then, you know, people could smoke in the bars and everything, and it had kind of this smoky feeling and everything. And she went and she found Chris, who kind of really didn't pay that much attention to her or anything. But, you know, he was trying to play real cool. And I'm going to describe
That's
a little
funny.
Bit this night. And then he and his friend Jimmy, who I always call Jim, was sitting at the bar there. And they kind of ignored her and everything and, you know, said hello, you know. But anyway, we sat there and we were listening to all this music. And it, that night really introduced me to some of my most favorite music in the world. You know, the Smiths, How Soon Is Now, In Excess's Original Sin, Yaz, Nobody's Diary, and other stuff that I had been listening to, you know, on MTV and everything. And it just really, really was very intoxicating. And then they had left to go to another bar, which was even more really cool music, 80s stuff, you know, kind of the new wave, kind of the punk era type stuff called Crazy Mamas. And you climb up this dark stairway upstairs, and this big guy greets you, checks your IDs. Back then, we could drink when we were 19, could drink beer in Ohio at 19. And he wasn't paying any attention to her. She went off with some guys from CCAD and left me sitting there. And that's when Jim started talking to me. And Jim and I were talking for a while, and we ended up going down and sitting in his car in a parking lot. And I'm sitting in his car talking to Jimmy. All of a sudden, the door opens, and there is Chris. He slides into the front seat and sits on my lap and introduces himself as Chris Ocasek. And I'm like, okay, it was the strangest introduction I've ever had. You know, I said, yeah, I'm Beth Ackerman and everything. And it became apparent that I lost my ride home. So we ended up taking his roommate from CCAD, Ramo, back to Ramo's sister's place on the east side. And in the back seat of the car, while this punk rock song is going, is Chris and Ramo singing at the top of their lungs, jumping up and down in the back seat of the car. And then we dropped Ramo off and dropped Chris off at CCAD. And then Jim and I dated for a while. And then 12 years later, because we were kind of on again, off again, I have a son with Jim. So that's the strangest night I ever had in my life, but it really impacted my love of certain songs. And those songs that from Mustards and Crazy Mamas, you know, they played a lot of Depeche Mode and New Order and Ramones and everything, just really got in my head. So that's kind of my favorite music, even though I'm associated now with a country artist. My music is still that 80s stuff. So that's my story. But anyway, tell us some more about the album. Are you still there?